It's Thursday, January 27th, and President Biden's about to get his shot to shape the Supreme Court. We start here.
We want to get this done as soon as possible.
By the end of today, Justice Stephen Breyer is expected to announce he's retiring.
It'll be a very interesting dynamic on the court in that the liberal bloc will be all women.
If President Biden's ever needed 50 votes in the Senate, it's right now. We'll walk through what happens next. It's not an old pirate ship. It's way more valuable than that.
Pound for pound, it could be the most valuable piece of treasure ever to have plummeted to the bottom of the seafloor.
Who gets to dig up a stealth fighter jet in the South China Sea? And Google can search for anything, including your whereabouts.
Virtually requiring that they track you every step.
Now, the company is facing lawsuits from all over the map. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. The last time a Supreme Court justice ended their time on the bench, it wasn't because of a retirement.
I have said many times that I will do this job as long as I can do it full steam.
Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was known as perhaps the most liberal justice on the Supreme Court, and she clearly wanted to have her successor named by a Democrat. But in the final years of the Obama presidency, she had a chance to retire and didn't take it.
The justices that I'm going to appoint will be pro-life. They will have a conservative bent.
Suddenly, after a surprise election, she's on the bench with a Republican president waiting for the next Democratic victory.
I would say that we are not experiencing the best of times.
Well, before that could happen, she died of pancreatic cancer. And despite saying these sorts of seats should not be filled in election years, then-Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell broke his own precedent to quickly replace her.
They denied even the courtesy of a hearing to President Obama's nominee after Justice Scalia passed.
Well, fast forward to the Biden administration, and lots of progressives have been asking, wait, is the court's next oldest justice, Stephen Breyer, also a member of the court's liberal wing, is he giving a repeat performance?
I've said that there are many different considerations and that I do not intend to die there on the court. I hope not.
Well, yesterday, with the midterm elections looming later this year, we learned Justice Breyer will step down, leaving it to President Biden to now pick his successor. A career-defining moment for the president begins today. So let's get into it with ABC's political director, Rick Klein, and our Supreme Court contributor, Kate Shaw. Kate, let's start with you. Why is Stephen Breyer calling it quits?
Well, Brad, as you alluded to in your opening, Justice Breyer really doesn't want the court to be perceived as political and did not want the timing of his departure to be perceived as driven by partisan motives.
This is not the first time that people have become discouraged with the democratic process.
And so I think the left was really frustrated that Justice Breyer spent all last term talking about how important it was that the court be nonpartisan and not making any announcements about his own departure.
Yeah, I believe that we should protect our Supreme Court, and I thought that should absolutely be a consideration.
We can only speculate about what actually changed his mind. I don't think it was his health. He's 83 years old, but as far as we know, he's in very good health. It may have been the dawning realization that this is a very divided court, and the 6-3 conservative supermajority is on its way to changing American law in some pretty dramatic ways, and his sticking around isn't changing that. And so it was better for him to leave and to give President Biden the opportunity to name a like-minded successor than it was for him to stick around in some display of nonpartisanship.
So, Rick Klein, what happens now? Because this used to be the thing where, you know, as long as the replacement's not super radical, you do some Senate hearings, person's dirty laundry gets aired, everyone argues over it, but then the Senate confirms you by some wide margin, right? Not anymore.
Those days are gone, but what's not gone is a window here for Democrats to actually get this done. And if you, I understand that Justice Breyer wouldn't want to make this political, but if he was trying to time this to help Joe Biden and the Democrats politically, I don't think he could have done a better job.
For so much of his life, Justice Breyer served the court with great distinction.
You have this precious majority in the United States Senate, a 50-50 Senate, yes, but of course that gives the Democrats the edge because of the tie-breaking vote, and that may be a fleeting thing.
Okay, in the Senate, we want to be deliberate, we want to move quickly, we want to get this done as soon as possible.
That's what's driven the urgency around Breyer, is the realization that Democrats pretty good shot they're going to lose the majority at the end of the year. And good luck getting a justice confirmed under Mitch McConnell's Senate. That's been tried before. Ask Barack Obama about how that went for him. So this is the window now.
That's 2 years away, Rick. Like, if a new president was to come in, that's 2 years away. Are you really saying that, like, the midterms come and go? Mitch McConnell now has majority control. You think that he would just literally tell Biden, no, you can't select someone for the next 2 years?
Yes, I do. He's done it before. Wow. He did it with 9 months or so left in Obama's term. I think he would do it in a heartbeat with 2 years left in Biden's term.
We don't even know who the nominee is yet. So that's something that the president has an opportunity to make, should there be a vacancy. And
I think Mitch McConnell has done whatever Mitch McConnell is able to do with the votes that he has in the Senate. One reason that Democrats can do this with just 50 votes, they can thank Mitch McConnell for that. Harry Reid, the late Harry Reid, changed the rules in the Senate for all lower court nominees, but he kept them intact for the Supreme Court. That's the 60-vote margin still held until Mitch McConnell blew it up. And that's what allowed Trump to get three justices confirmed with just a bare majority. So yes, the clock is ticking, and I think Joe Biden and Democrats, they know it all along.
So, Kate, if the clock is indeed ticking, what would happen if no one got selected in time? Say there's some, you know, crazy hearing, and then they have to, or some scandal, and Biden has to pick somebody, then he has to pick a new person. Would it just be an 8-person Supreme Court for a long time?
So we don't exactly know the terms on which Justice Breyer is announcing his retirement because we haven't yet seen his letter.
There has been no announcement from Justice Breyer. Let him make whatever statement he's going to make, and I'll be happy to talk about it later.
But I expect that he will say that his retirement is effective upon the confirmation of his successor. So whenever Biden gets somebody confirmed, Breyer goes. So if that's the case, there will, you know, continuously be 9 justices on the court.
But does Breyer get to tell Joe Biden, I'm sticking around unless you select this person or that person? Like, I don't know. Do things like that happen kind of off the record?
Well, look, there's not even just off the record. There's reporting that Anthony Kennedy asked President Trump to nominate his former clerk, Brett Kavanaugh, to fill his seat. And in fact, President Trump did just that. Now, I don't really think that's Justice Breyer's style. Although if he were making such an ask, I expect he would ask President Biden to nominate Ketanji Brown Jackson.
She's a former clerk of Justice Breyer's, and she's already actually gone through the Senate confirmation process, earning the support of 3 Republican senators when she was confirmed to the powerful D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
I don't know this, but I assume he would be very pleased to see his former clerk take his seat.
Yeah, let's talk about replacements then. So that's the next big thing for President Biden. Rick, is there a sense of who's on the list? You got to have a list, right? I assume every president's just got a list sitting in a cabinet somewhere.
You made it easy for him and easy for us by committing back as a candidate 2 years ago to picking a black woman.
I committed that if I'm elected president, have an opportunity to appoint someone to the courts, I'll appoint the first black woman to the courts. It's required that they have representation now. It's long overdue.
We've heard from the White House that he plans to make good on that commitment. I think Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson is at the top, tippity top of the list for lots of reasons.
When you become a judge, you take an oath to look only at the law.
But I think this process is going to be fascinating, Brad, because I think there's an opportunity here for Joe Biden, just as he used that initial pledge to kind of revive his candidacy during the primaries, to use this to make clear to Democrats and even some Republicans that he gets the message of what governance is about, that there's a full airing of different candidates. We'll hear, I'm sure, calculated leaks about people that might or might not be considered. There's lots of constituencies that are going to have to be well taken care of through this process. And at the end of the day, he can count on what we'd expect to be a united Democratic Party and maybe even some Republicans. In the past, like you said, Brad, it's not that long ago that even Antonin Scalia could get overwhelming votes to get confirmed.
Justice Breyer, nominated by President Bill Clinton in 1994, confirmed by a vote of 87-9.
I don't expect anything like that, but it is possible, and we've seen some signals already from a couple of Republicans. They're not going to reflexively oppose this. And because we're not changing the ideological makeup of the court, I think you've got an opportunity here to kind of, for some Republicans, to kind of give one to the Democrats. Say, okay, we get it. We'll let you have this one. We'll fight it out another day. I think there's an opportunity for Biden to build back politically at a low point of his presidency and start to make some progress and remind Democrats why they're Democrats again.
I think actually, if President Biden makes good on his promise and nominates and then gets confirmed a black woman, it'll be a very interesting dynamic on the court in that the liberal bloc will be all women, 2 women of color. So Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan, and the new nominee. And that could happen right around the time that the court overturns Roe versus Wade, as I think it is very likely to do. And so I think that, you know, kind of focusing the country's attention on dynamics of race and gender and access to reproductive care, you know, actually might be an important political issue for the Democrats. So I do think that at the kind of point of confirmation, and then sort of if that remains the liberal wing of the court for the foreseeable future, I think that'll be kind of symbolically and substantively a significant development.
Don't get much bigger than this for any president. Rick Klein and Kate Shaw, thank you both.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, finders keepers is a fun rule until you lose a $100 million plane. Let's take a deep dive after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Whenever you hear about sunken treasure, you think of an old ship that sank in a storm or a battle a few centuries ago. Everything on board plummeted down to the seafloor, and if you could find that treasure, you'd be rich. But treasure did not stop sinking hundreds of years ago. Incredibly expensive things can get lost at sea now, too. It's just that the battleships of old look a little different from military equipment now.
The F-35 is our largest TACAIR investment and will form the backbone of the U.S. and allied fifth generation inventory for the foreseeable future.
And a couple days ago, an American fighter jet was doing a routine flight over the Pacific Ocean. It had a hard impact as it landed on an aircraft carrier, and as its pilot ejected, the plane fell into the ocean. The only thing is, that ocean is the South China Sea, and the Chinese might be tempted to do what treasure hunters have always done and grab it. ABC's Matt Gutman has been tracking this. Matt, can you just describe how valuable this plane is? What are we talking about?
I mean, pound for pound, it could be the most valuable piece of treasure ever to have plummeted to the bottom of the seafloor. We're talking about the cumulative knowledge of hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. development into the stealth fighter system, the F-35, the most advanced weapons platform arguably that ever has existed.
Make no mistake, the F-35 is the world's most advanced, lethal, and interoperable aircraft ever developed.
And so, you know, the value of the plane itself may be $80 or $100 million, but the knowledge therein is incredible. And China is certainly interested in knowing much more about that, our analysts tell us.
Wait, so in a world that has like all these military laws and statutes, all this maritime law, all these treaties, this is just finders keepers? Like, who's going to go down there?
What's amazing is that it's a free-for-all, Brad. Anybody, you and I, can go down and try to get it if we can get there and find it. Commercial vessels could go down there. Russia, China, anybody with the capability can go try to locate it. It would have to show the ability to raise it and then demand a financial reward from the United States.
The race is on now to get the appropriate kind of recovery gear, the deep diving submersibles that actually pull the wreckage up off the bottom of the ocean. The Chinese have it, the U.S. Navy has it. It'll take the U.S. time to get it there. So it's a slow race, but an important race that the U.S. wins.
I mean, not everybody's going to want to mess with the United States on this, but the Salvage Convention says that anybody has rights to this, to pull it up. They can't take it home and keep it. But if China gets there first, elbows the U.S. out, they can take possession of this F-35C, try to reverse engineer it, and then hand it back to the United States. And that would be completely legal.
Leaders of the Chinese Communist Party have been increasingly vocal about their dissatisfaction with the prevailing order. and about their aim of displacing America from its global leadership world.
They could also, because they lay claim to territoriality in the South China Sea, say, hey, U.S., we allowed you to navigate through our waters, but you can't go digging on our seafloor, so we will pull it up. You're not allowed to do so, and then we'll give it back to you when we're ready.
Wow, so, okay, in theory then, you've talked about like the theoretical. Let's talk about the practical. U.S. and China, two huge superpowers. Are they going to dance around each other? Is there equipment that they're going to deploy either, you know, openly or secretly? Who does what?
Legal experts tell me this could be a very nasty political fracas. I mean, this could be the U.S. versus China for quite some time. Unless the U.S. manages to get out there really quickly and scoop this thing up.
President Xi in China is clearly looking to see what President Putin gets away with and what President Biden resists.
But there's another complication, which is submarines. There is virtually no maritime law on submarines. So if China or Russia or anybody can get submarine equipment down there, scoop up the plane, they can take it, no one will be the wiser. They could also try to reverse engineer it or scoop it up that way. The bottom line is this is really no man's land.
Part of what makes the F-35C very unique is its stealth technology. It's almost invisible to radar. And so the construction, the coatings that are on that airplane are of great interest to the Chinese.
And what's at stake here is something that will have cost by the end of its life cycle U.S. taxpayers $1.7 trillion. The stakes here are unlike anything we've ever seen before.
Yeah, and the South China Sea, such a tricky part of the world, and that the Chinese claim that that is their sovereign territory. The rest of the international community say, no, that's just open ocean. However, the people with the big submarines and the big guns often get to make the rules. We'll see who busts them out first. Matt Gutman, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
On lots of websites now, you're prompted to decide whether you're okay with sites using cookies to remember you in the future or to learn more about you. I usually try to quickly click, you know, reject them all or reject as many as possible because I like protecting my privacy. But I'm also not really willing to spend a lot of time reading about how much my info is private. I don't go that deep. Well, this week, several state attorneys general initiated big-time lawsuits against Google over the information it gathers on its users.
The lawsuit states Google tracks users even when they opt out and that the company misleads users by not revealing that.
And these were not like the country's foremost conservative or foremost liberal prosecutors. We're talking about Washington State, Texas, Indiana, and Washington, D.C. We've actually got perhaps the most outspoken of all of them. Washington, D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine joins us this morning. Mr. Attorney General, thanks for joining us. I feel like tech companies are gathering information about us all the time, right? What did Google do in your mind that is so egregious?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me on your informative show. I am a constant listener. Here's the deal. In America, there are rules, and the rules say this. Companies like Google and the other tech companies are required to tell you the truth. And so what Google and others say is that you are in control of whether they have your location.
For any service we provide our users, we go to great lengths to protect their privacy, and we give them transparency, choice, and control.
The consumer laws in the District of Columbia, and I believe my colleagues, as you well said, on a bipartisan basis in Indiana, Texas, and Washington State agree that their laws also require the companies to tell the truth. Google has not been telling the truth.
Basically, people thought that they were setting their settings so that their location histories were being erased, but these suits are alleging that they didn't do that.
What Google has done instead is that they have designed their way into virtually requiring that they track you every step you go.
Data makes our services work better for you. Like when it calculates your commute so you get to work right on time.
There are a bunch of other things that it does in the background that actually pinpoints your location with timestamps to your Google account.
Google designs it that way. They could easily have a little icon that says, don't ever track me unless I say it's okay. And so these so-called dark designs are made in order for Google to make money on targeted advertisements because they know where you are.
So So it's like one of the golden tickets to their digital advertising empire. Knowing where a person goes and where they tend to go helps them deliver ads.
I have to emphasize that where we go, how frequently we go to where we go, is incredibly important and informative and personal and confidential. It reveals where we pray, if we pray, who we're seeing, what we're doing, what our life is all about. We have the right to say, stop it, and they can't repeatedly overturn our decision.
When on Google phones, for instance, there's a button in the settings that says location services. You can slide that button to off. You guys have called it a master switch. And then in your lawsuit, you say they actually keep tracking your location using IP addresses, using different folders. But I'm thinking about Uber or Google Maps, or even to use a cell phone to place a call. You know, some machine out there needs to essentially ascertain your location. So I mean, how far do you want the setting changes to go?
Well, the easiest mechanism would be to have a very visible icon that says, forever, do not track me. Has anyone ever seen such an icon from Google? The answer is no. What I always get is this weird little box that says, hey, do you want me to track you? Allow once, all the time, not now? That thing comes up all day long. It's like someone asking you to buy something and you're telling them no 100 times. And then one time, because you're in a rush, you don't say no. That is called a dark pattern.
Hey, let me read you part of Google's statement in response. It says you guys are relying on inaccurate claims and outdated assertions. And I'm looking at the lawsuit, like you mentioned how you can clear your location history, but that's not the only place your location's stored, right? It can also be in this thing called web and app activity, which for years wasn't mentioned on the screen when you were setting up your account. Well, in 2018, Google points out, they started mentioning it. So time has changed some of these things, right?
The history is that Google has always tracked you maximally. And what happened in 2018? Did they wake up and say that's not right? No. Journalists revealed what Google was doing.
The report says to actually turn off location tracking, you need to go into your Google account and find the setting called web app and activity.
And so what did Google do? It shifted how it did it. But is it still doing it? Is it still tracking you incessantly, trying to stack the cards against you, trick you? Of course it is. And what if they changed forever in 2018? Well, in America, when you have lied to users and you have profited immensely from that over a five-year period, you still pay the price. So they owe damages for their misdeeds, and they still have more to do to match their words and representations to me and you, the user.
Really interesting seeing these lawsuits from four different attorneys general. Google did issue a statement saying, we have always built privacy features into our products and provided robust controls for location data. We will vigorously defend ourselves and set the record straight. They've also said they've created new default options for users that automatically delete location history after 18 months. But like I said, some of those tools that deal with location remain in very different parts of their settings to this day. Carl Racine, Attorney General in the District of Columbia. Thank you so much for the time.
Hey, thank you so much for the opportunity.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, if your Gucci bag costs $40, maybe don't brag about your Gucci bag. One Last Thing is next.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing. There's an American tradition of fake it till you make it. If you can't afford a Chanel handbag, well, go ahead, get a knockoff. Wear a channel. Work. But in South Korea, it apparently doesn't work that way.
여기 두 개의 섬이 있습니다.
On Netflix, there's a Korean reality show called Singles Inferno. Like any other dating show, it features aspiring actors, models, wannabe influencers.
오랜만에 월간 프리지아.
And one of the breakout stars this season was this woman named Song Ji-ha, who is Instagram famous for wearing super upscale clothes, eating super expensive food. She was like an it girl.
She was pretending that they were real when they were actually fake.
Well, then fans started noticing that her Dior top was a slightly different shade of pink than what is currently selling for $600. Her Prada looked more like Prado.
최근 논란이 되고 있는 가품 사용에 대해 인정하며
Song released a video solemnly admitting she did, in fact, wear knockoffs, and she was eviscerated for it.
Maybe her whole internet personality of the golden spoon girl might have been all made up.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that her adopting this fake persona really hurt the authenticity of her.
Fans have been calling her a liar and a cheat. Her talent agency has distanced itself from her, and other shows that had booked her as part of her rapid rise started canceling. That is where things have gotten even weirder, because Song had already filmed guest appearances on several Korean reality shows in recent months. Well, one of them was released this week, and it caused an uproar. The producers had to beg forgiveness for even allowing Song's face on screen. Media analysts have said, in Korea, the idea of misrepresenting yourself is just not something you do, especially if you're trying to play up how rich you are. Another game show took the hint and now says it has edited her out of an upcoming episode. Apparently, there's no label more powerful than a scarlet letter. My dog Frank has a little doggy jacket. Instead of saying North Face, it says North Fetch. And now I'm terrified of putting him on Instagram. Like, please don't cancel Frank, you guys. This is a true story. You can find us on Instagram and on Twitter at Start Here ABC every day. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.